Hello and welcome to Theatre Club Podcast.
We bring you theatre news,
theatre reviews,
and very rarely these days some theatre-themed booze. We used to do a cocktail, hasn't been done for a while because we're doing morning recordings now.
Yeah, we said in our last episode we would bring back a cocktail this time, but hey, we're doing another morning record. It's just very hard. Do you know what? When we see each other of an evening, we're going to the theatre, and then
yes,
we get back at like 11 o'clock at night, and I just don't have the energy. So it's a morning record, no cocktail this time. We're not quite at morning drinking.
Not there yet.
We'll see. Hey, maybe next time. It's worth mentioning we're recording at Alice's house again, and she has builders in doing a new floor in her kitchen. So if we hear any banging during the record, that'll be that, or any road noise, because we've moved to the front of the house to avoid the kitchen. But we're now battling with kitchen noise one side, road noise on the other.
It's recycling day.
And it's recycling day, so we might have that interruption at some point.
We've got a lot to talk about this episode. We've seen Police Cops the musical
at Southwark Playhouse, which you have seen before, you raved about, so we've now both seen it in its new run. I went to see Cruel Intentions the musical at the other Palace. You weren't able to make it, so I'll tell you all about Cruel Intentions, the 90s pop musical, I think is its full title. And we both went to see Standing at the Sky's Edge, the National Theatre production and Sheffield Theatre co-production. Now it's transferred into the West End after winning the Olivier for Best New Musical. And it's music by Richard Hawley, and it's now at the Gillingham Theatre. I saw it at the National, but we've both been to see it together, so we can discuss what we both thought about that. And usually you do a top tip, and I know you were kind of going between a couple of things this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found something that I want to do as a top tip. I just saw it and I thought, oh my God, this has to be our top tip because everyone needs to go and see it. Fuerza Bruta is back. So this is something that was at the Roundhouse years ago. I think I've seen it twice there a long time ago. So it's called Fuerza Bruta. So that's Fuerza and then Bruta. They're from Buenos Aires, and it's kind of like a...
Buenos Aires,
and it's a sort of dance show meets circus show meets... It's got no speaking in it, and you're all stood, so it's all standing. You basically go in, it's almost like a gig at the Roundhouse, and they basically you're moved in and around the audience. So, you know, it's like an immersive kind of thing. A bit like Punch Drunk, but with less of a narrative. You're not following like a storyline. They're just doing like incredible things, which I won't spoil, but... You know, they're doing aerial work, there's water involved, there's like physical dancey things. The music is like South American kind of heavy drums. It's like a club night, some of it, like the beat that goes, it's like a big party, and it's one of the best things I've ever seen. I saw it twice.
I definitely came and watched one with you because I remember seeing
Glass. Yes, the water thing, which they actually performed at one of the Eurovision Song Contest finals. I feel like it was Russia, actually, weirdly. Years back, they did a performance with the glass, like a big tank basically comes down on top of the audience and it's full of water and they're like swimming in it like sort of mermaids, and you can reach up and touch them.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I do remember
it's
this.
So much fun. And it's coming back to the Roundhouse, and it starts on the 24th of July and runs until... Oh, no, sorry. Starts on the 9th of July and runs until the 31st of August. And tickets are really affordable because it's all standing, so there's no seating. You can get whatever view you want. And tickets are £49 for standard standing tickets. I think concessions are about £20-25. And that's across pretty much all performances. It's just really, it's like spectacular.
And the tickets are on sale now?
Tickets are on sale now, and it's at the Roundhouse from July the 9th until August the 31st, and that's Fuerza Bruta, Fuerza Bruta, but just go on the Roundhouse website and you'll find it. Okay, let's do our first review. Let's do Standing at the Sky's Edge, which we have reviewed. I reviewed on this podcast when it was on at the National Theatre. It won the Olivier for Best New Musical and has transferred to the Gillian Lynn Theatre in the West End.
And it's caused quite a stir since it's opened. I feel like it's been reviewed in the Telegraph, the Times. It's on the, like, rave reviews, should I say. And it's like, there's posters for it everywhere. All my friends have seen it. Jules Holland said it's the best musical he's ever seen. You know, there's quite a lot of buzz around it, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I went into this not knowing, other than, like, when we discussed it, that it's taken from an album. The music in it is...
Ooh. Yeah, Richard Hawley's music. I'm not sure if it's from one album or whether it's from a collection of his works. But yeah, the musician Richard Hawley, it's his songs that they've taken and put them into a play, I would say.
Yeah, it's a play with music, a little bit like Girl from the North Country.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because it's, unlike Girl from the North Country, written by Conor McPherson, this, again, is written by Chris Bush, and she is more, I would say, of a playwright. You know, some musicals have books written by people who write books for musicals, if that makes sense. Whereas Chris Bush seems like a playwright, and this feels like a play in which they have added some of his songs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not like a Mamma Mia, where they kind of, the story is really being told by the songs. The songs are his music, very like lyrical and poetic, like Bob Dylan's in Girl from the North Country. So they set a tone rather than tell the story.
Okay, let's talk about the story briefly.
Mm-hmm.
It opens and you're in a big... The set is amazing. The set is incredible.
Set and costumes by Ben Stones.
It's a massive concrete council estate, and written on the side of one of the sort of bridges in neon says, I love you, will you marry me? And that's actually taken... This is all based around a true council estate in Sheffield. Somebody had written that up, and when they demolished it and rebuilt it, they decided to leave it up because it was so kind of iconic. You could see it from all over Sheffield. So the set itself is like a whole character.
It's such a good set, and it works really well in the Gillian Lynn because it's a big open theatre.
Yes. And in one of the levels of this, you're sort of looking outside at the apartment block. There is a level that's just got the live band.
Oh, yeah. They're on two levels,
they're
I think.
They're on two levels.
But we were quite close, actually, so it's kind of hard to see the top level.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you could see the band, which I thought was a really good idea.
Really cool. I loved that. Because it's like there were people inside these apartments, but also, like, it's just great hearing live music, isn't it?
Yeah, and it feels live. And occasionally the actors use microphones. Sometimes they don't, sometimes they do. So it kind of has this very music-y vibe.
Yeah. And... One of the actors in it we recognised. So you meet the first person that you meet living in there. She's just recently from a breakup. She's bought this. She's moved from London. She's bought this new apartment. And she was called...
Laura Pitt-Pulford.
Laura Pitt-Pulford. And we had seen her at the Southwark Playhouse in a musical called Sideshow. Her voice is amazing. She's a great actor. Like... We just really enjoy watching her. So that was fun to see her. And she's really good in this, obviously.
Yeah, so she's the modern day. So this takes place over three time periods of people living in the same flat in this building. And we see it from the first couple to move in when it was a council estate in the 60s through to a family in the 1980s who have come over from Liberia, the refugees. And then 2016, I think it starts, 17. We see Laura Pitt-Pulford's character moving in. So it kind of goes from like when it was a council estate at the beginning in this quite exciting new time to the 80s when it was like quite run down and this family had to live in there and they didn't necessarily feel safe, to the kind of maybe gentrification of these flats now, thanks Maggie Thatcher, being sold off to, you know, people moving out of London to come and buy a house in a listed building.
Yeah, so I would say that there are some quite heavy themes running through this, like you just touched on there. Like, there is Maggie Thatcher in there, is also like,
the steel workers strikes in Sheffield, like in the Full Monty, that's kind of backdrop for that, how Sheffield was sort of decimated by the steelworks
exactly
being taken away,
and how that affected their, you know, a couple's relationship. And then we've also obviously, like you just said, about the immigration family who had come in and how they didn't feel, they were like, you know, ostracized and
how it didn't feel like their home. There's like, that's one of the running themes, is home. Like, is home a building? Is home the people that you live with? That's kind of a running theme.
Yes. But there is like, sprinkled in there, there is like quite a few gags, like quite a few jokes.
Yes, I think Chris Bush's writing is actually really funny. There was definitely some good kind of regional-based humour about the Henderson's relish, for example. That was a really fun scene, which is Sheffield's sort of version of Worcester sauce and how important that is to them culturally.
Mm.
And that was like a really funny scene. I thought the second half had some sort of, not better, right? You know, the first was a lot of setup, but the second half had, especially the modern day story really came to fruition when they're at the big New Year's Eve party. There was some good writing in that, I thought.
Really good writing. And actually, you believed in that couple and mm-hmm. you kind of wanted them to get back together almost. And
yeah, there was some like,
Interesting ideas, really layered and nuanced performances, wasn't it? It was kind of like, I really felt like I understood those characters.
I think like, because it's a play with music, that kind of allows the actors to sort of do both. So when they're acting, I felt like they're, you know, it was like a play. Not that in other musicals there's not proper acting, but it felt like they would got to do both. And when they sang, they didn't have to necessarily lead through from their performance into song. They could kind of pause and then sing a song and present that in a different way.
Yeah, you're so right.
Which is, you know, because the songs, they work so well because they're lyrical. They totally sum up the emotion of what the character's feeling without it having to really link in directly. It's more the mood. So you're like, oh yeah, that character's just had this heartbreaking conversation. Now they're singing a song that's kind of generally about heartache without any specificity.
Yeah.
But you still feel that emotional connection.
It's a vibe. It's a heartbreak vibe they're giving. But also I felt like they're writing at the end. I don't want to do any spoilers. It's hard, isn't it? Mm. But there's that bit at the end and it's just a few lines that I said, there was not a dry eye in my, you know, I could hear people like sniffing and the girl next to me was crying. That one in front was crying. I would have cried, but I had just watched One Day on Netflix, the new series, and had cried so much in that. Oscar, it's please. So... No, I'm honestly, it's really good. It's really good.
Okay.
So I didn't have anything left. I was drained, but...
It did get me, actually. I didn't cry, but I don't cry very often. But it was an emotional...
Ending.
An emotional ending. Yeah,
it's really good.
It is. And I thought the choreography this time, I kind of watched a bit more by Lynn Page. And it had this... So there's a really big ensemble, which I enjoyed, which kind of populates the building. So we have our main three storylines, but then you have a lot of just the people of the building. And those worked really well in the group musical numbers. But also the choreography I thought was quite fun. It was like... about the cycle of time, they kept doing like repetitive movement. Did you notice that? Like people would walk on and do like a sequence and then they'd repeat it and repeat it.
No,
I
didn't see that.
Quite fun. Like in the big, especially when there was that big sort of number at the end of the first act that sort of got a bit violent and showed the kind of powder keg of the situation, they were all sort of repeating the movements. The guy would like run and jump over the thing and do it over and over again, which I thought worked really well. And kind of interesting that it wasn't that noticeable to you.
Yeah.
But I think that was kind of a second time round. I was paying attention more to that because there was so much going on.
Yeah, I didn't like that ending of Act One.
Do you know what? I think we were sat, we had great seats, but I think we were actually sat a little too close.
I think we were too.
When I saw it at the National, I was up in the circle and I felt not too far away, but I felt, oh, I'm quite far away. And this time I was like, oh, I feel a bit too close. And you actually, because this building is so big, it's this big brutalist set of this massive block, I felt we were a bit too close and maybe sometimes a bit too close to the performances. Sometimes I like to take in a performance from a distance a bit more rather than being too close to an actor.
Yes.
And seeing it,
especially because we're in a you know, the building, you kind of probably wanted to get a little bit of distance from the building.
Exactly. But I mean, still, it was great being up close, better than having an obscured view. But the Gillian Lynn has no obscured view seats. I don't think you'd get an amazing view wherever you sat.
Yes, it's worth saying, yeah, we went to see Crazy for You there earlier this year, was it? No,
last year. Yeah.
And we sat on the very back row of the circle, and it's a great view.
And we had a friend who came to this, and she sat at the back, the very back of the stalls, quite an affordable seat. I think it was 30, but she got it on a Today Tix offer for a bit less than that. But for £30, right at the back of the stalls, she said that her view was incredible.
Yeah, that's probably where we should have sat if we were going to...
So yeah, I mean, I loved it just as much as the first time. But our main negative point, our only one really, was that the first act is long. It's an hour and a half for the first act and an hour for the second.
I was at the point where I thought, is this going straight
through? Straight through, yeah. I think the second act really picks up, and maybe that's because of the legwork of the first act that it then that pays off. But it, I do think it could still do with 15-minute trim from Act One.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Standing at the Sky's Edge. It runs at the Gillian Lynn Theatre until the 3rd of August, so you've got all summer long to go and see this. And back of the circle tickets and the back of the stalls are 25. Back of the circle is £20 and 25 on a Tuesday night. On a Saturday, probably a little more. So basically, just you cannot really get a bad seat in the Gillian Lynn because it's the sight lines are great and this set is so big and open and there's so much going on that I would say just go for a good cheap seat and I think you'll get really good value for money. So that's Standing at the Sky's Edge at the Gillian Lynn until the 3rd of August
2024.
Shall I do Cruel Intentions?
Yes.
Which you were unable to come. We were supposed to go together. You couldn't make it, so I went. This is Cruel Intentions, the musical, or I think it's called Cruel Intentions, the 90s pop musical, perhaps, to give it its full title.
I decided to watch the film instead.
Oh, did you rewatch the film?
Rewatched the film. Hadn't seen it since I was at college.
Well, the film turns 25 this year, I believe, and which is crazy. 25 years old. And it is a teen movie from 1999 based on Dangerous Liaisons, or Liaisons Dangereuses, to give it its original French title, which is all about, it was set like in a French court in, you know, ye olde times. And it's about the kind of malicious machinations of this character, these two characters, who are basically kind of narcissists, bad people who want to mess with other people's lives, and they get entangled in, you know, all sorts of, they want to bring someone down. Anyway, so they adapted this to set it in a high school, a Catholic high school in New York, with a kind of New York elite, starring Ryan Philippe and Sarah Michelle Gellar, Selma Blair.
Reese Witherspoon,
of course. And it's a classic teen movie from the 90s. It was very dark, very edgy. It had a great soundtrack, which is why this has kind of come to being with this kind of pop soundtrack. So basically, the musical is very close to the film. It runs like extremely close. It is kind of just retelling the story of the film on stage. All the lines from the movie are still in it. This isn't like Legally Blonde or Heathers, where they've written a kind of new book, or even Mean Girls, where they changed it from the movie quite a lot for the stage. This is the lines from the movie put on stage. And then they use 90s music, songs from the soundtrack for the movie, plus other added 90s hits. Now, does that work? Does it not? I don't really know. See, I saw some clips of this when it was in New York, and it was a scaled-back production where they basically just had a band on stage and then singers came on and kind of performed it that way. This is more of a full-scale production. There's like a set. There is a band, but you can't see them, and I think that's a big mistake. I really wanted to see the band to give it that karaoke kind of feel, rather than this sort of more of a trying to be like a real musical, because when they go into the songs, some of them are sort of sincere and some of them are supposed to be funny. You know, like in Anne Juliet, quite a few of the songs got laughs because they'd be like so kind of on the nose of the moment of like, oh, I just, you know, I don't feel like I'm a girl yet, but I'm not yet a woman. And then it would like launch into the song and the audience kind of titters because it's like we're recognising the famous pop song and how it's being fit into this musical. There were moments like that in this, and some of them I think were intentionally funny. Like when the gay character does a Britney Spears number, it's supposed to be kind of camp and silly. And when the Christine Baranski character, as played by Jess Buckby in this, what does she sing that's quite funny? Oh, she sings No Scrub. That's what she's singing about the cello instructor. And that's obviously like really comical that she's this uptight New York socialite singing No Scrub.
Yeah.
But then some of the other numbers are supposed to actually be a bit more like genuine, like some of, what's Reese Witherspoon's character called? She is Annette, who's played in this by Abby Budden. Some of her songs are supposed to be a bit more like genuine. Like her opening song, she does I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt, which is not suited to her musical theatre voice. That's kind of too much of a rocky song. And so that kind of hit like a bit of a dud note for me. And I thought, this is supposed to be her actual, like, I want song. And it's not, it's just not working.
It doesn't really go for her character. If you know the film as well, like, her character is, she's like religious and she's,
yeah,
like, she writes for her local school paper and she's not a No Doubt girl.
No, so that didn't work at all. Which was a shame. So the kind of funnier numbers worked better, But I feel like they just needed to commit to, you didn't see Pride and Prejudice sort of, but that was like Pride and Prejudice as told by a group of girls on a hen night doing karaoke. They'd sort of grab the mic and start singing a song. And I kind of wanted that like grab the mic moment in this more. Some of the more sincere numbers just didn't really translate with these pop songs. And some of the choreography felt a little bit Hamilton light.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't quite know what to do with that, which was a bit of a shame. I will say that because it follows the film so closely, it does zip along at a good pace. Like, you're just moving from scene to scene. They could have done, I think, with a bit of musical underscore. So, you know, whenever, like, Sebastian and Catherine, who are stepbrother and sister and have this weird sexual tension, and, like, they're the two awful characters at the centre. In the movie, whenever they're having these malicious Machiavellian discussions, there's that real score, like sultry score, kind of,
yeah,
that it, some of those scenes were silent and that didn't work, because I'm like, no, we need music.
Do you
under
know what?
This
I rewatched Cruel Intentions with Ruby, who's like a lot younger and hasn't seen it, and I was like, oh, this is a classic, you have to see it. Mm-hmm. And then I was rewatching it with her and I was like, oh, this is weird in a different way. I think when we were younger and watched it, we were like, oh my god, it's so edgy, it's so sexual. Mm-hmm. Like, we've never seen anything like it. And now I'm watching it and I'm thinking, wait, so they are basically mm-hmm. trying to ruin this girl's life by making her, like, they
have
just
sex with him, so kind of tricking her.
Yes.
Consent. Well, there's trigger warnings when you go into the theatre. There's little posters saying that this production has issues of consent, racism, homophobia. So that is part of the problem with this production. A lot of that jars. And again, if you'd had the more campy, knowing, like, we're breaking into pop songs, grabbing the mic, breaking the fourth wall, you can't make this like Legally Blonde where you're actually involved in the story, because they're despicable people and the way in which they operate doesn't really hold up for a modern audience. And they keep all the classic lines in there, a lot of which are homophobic.
Mm.
So they expand the gay character's role. You know, they try and, like, frame the gay guy, Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson, and I actually think he does a really good performance, and that character I really liked.
Well, they kind of expand that in that we just keep on seeing his relationship with the guy, so they kind of, but it doesn't go anywhere. And also, they never actually kiss on the mouth the night I saw it, and I'm like, okay, if you're going to use, like, homophobic slurs, and to counteract that, you're going to give them more to do in this production. Why aren't they kissing on the mouth ever?
Yeah.
Anyway, that kind of annoyed me, because they sort of came really close and then would, like, choreograph dance. Or, I don't know, I was just like, just kiss on the mouth.
I want to see two men kiss.
I want to see two men kiss if we're going to enjoy the 90s homophobia of it,
yeah,
all.
Yeah, please, can you balance this out?
Because, yeah, because you can watch, well, if you were there first time around, I feel like you can rewatch it and enjoy Sarah Michelle Gellar's over-the-top camp, horrible nastiness and homophobia in that sort of 90s campy way. But this needed to lean more into that and try less to have any sort of sincerity, because then it's like, wait, are we supposed to feel anything for Sebastian? He's a piece of shit as well.
Yeah.
So those bits just don't work. It's just not working unless you're winking sideways at it, being like, yeah, this film is of its time. We're making fun of it. We're having a fun thing. I just really wish it had been more Cruel Intentions, the parody.
Yes.
Obviously, we're going to do Police Cops next, and this needed more of the Police Cop, as we'll talk about, that parody vibe, that,
yes,
silly parody. This is a parody of a 90s movie. Like, this is what we watched in the 90s, people being, you know, 18 year olds living this like ridiculous,
yeah,
life. You know, it kind of gave birth to like Gossip Girl, that movie, didn't it?
Yeah, you're so right. It was the upper elite and how they all are acting like adults, really.
Yeah, which is quite clever, actually, even for its time, to set it like that, because it removes you from actually thinking these are real 18-year-olds.
Mm.
This is like an imaginary world of the New York elite kind of thing. It just doesn't work to translate it. There is like a fun, one of the cast members from the movie does an announcement at the beginning of the production, and that's quite fun. The,
ooh,
like, turn off your phone announcement kind of thing is done by one of the original cast members.
That's cool.
So that's cool. It is quite fun. I just, I'm not recommending you go see it, sadly.
Okay.
It just needed to be more edgy, more raw, more parody.
Yeah.
Not, it's straddling both. It's trying to have its cake and eat it too. It wants to be the next Heathers, like an actual production.
Mm.
But it's not. It just needs to be, I want band on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I want mics, preferably with a nice long cable.
Yeah.
Like, so
make it cool.
Yeah, it's not a huge success, sadly. I think people were enjoying it in there, so I think it will work for lots of people. I'm sure the Heathers crowd will kind of enjoy it, but it won't have any sort of lasting appeal, I don't think, unless they change it up.
Right.
So, Cruel Intentions runs at the Other Palace in Victoria until the 19th of May. Tickets are, they're not cheap. So again, I can't like encourage anyone to go because the back row, although you get a good view because it's a small theatre, so it's a good view, but the back row is £38. Those do tend to sell out. And then you're left with, you're looking at like £49, £69.
Wow.
And that's just too much. Yeah. I want, that back row used to be 25, I think. And that's what we used to do. Mm. We used to get the back row or the front row for about £25. £38.50, I think it is. It's too much. So, I don't know. It's not a ringing endorsement. It was, I had a fun time, but I wouldn't recommend anyone to really go see this. Not when there's funner things on, like our next show, which is Police Cops. So that was Cruel Intentions, Other Palace till 19th of May. But let's move on to Police Cops, the musical.
Cannot wait to talk about it. Obviously, I was so excited when I saw it last time when it was at the Southwark Playhouse. Called you up straight afterwards, said you've got to get a ticket to this, but it was last night. Then it's recently come back on sale. It's now at, it's still at Southwark Playhouse, but it's at their new venue, which is worth mentioning because I didn't realise that and had to run there, which is sort of by Elephant and Castle Tube, whereas the other one's a little bit further down the street, isn't it?
Yeah. I did, as the ticket booker, I did get a message on the day reminding me
that that's
at
good.
The Elephant venue.
And this musical started off as a play at Edinburgh Fringe, mm-hmm. and is now a musical, and it's based on sort of 80s cliches, American police sort of, Police Academy kind of.
Yes, Lethal Weapon,
yes.
Die Hard, all the big 80s action police movies.
It's a cast of five and they all change outfits. They all do multiple parts. They are all singing, dancing. They're doing everything. It looks like so much fun. When you're watching these actors together, they look like they're having the time of their lives, don't they?
Yeah. And three of them I was just reading. So Zachary Hunt, Nathan Parkinson and Tom Rowe met at drama school. And that's where this sort of developed from, and then they took it to Edinburgh, and it's a huge, the non-musical version was a huge hit at Edinburgh, and they did a couple of versions of that. Then they decided to make it into a musical version of that show,
right,
with the help of Ben Adams, who was from A1, the boy band from the 2000s.
Oh yeah.
And he also wrote music for Eugenius, which was at the
Other Palace,
and that was an 80s musical, so they've sort of gone to him for that poppy 80s sound to add songs into what was already a show. And then the two other cast members are Melinda Orengo and Natasha Bustamante. So there's, yeah, just five, like you said.
Just five. The band is on stage. Mm-hmm. Well, they're sort of a little bit up. And the band is amazing. When I saw it last time, the band was right on the stage on the side. And they were like, it was like they were almost part of the... this time they're a little bit set up, but... they're so cool, aren't they?
Yeah, and a good sound.
Like, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, really good. And it does obviously bear comparisons just off the bat to another show we saw at Southwark Playhouse, Operation Mincemeat, which is now in the West End, in that it's this small company multi-rolling, and the multi-rolling is part of the comedy.
Yes.
And this feels very Edinburgh Fringe in a good way.
Yeah. You know, if somebody doesn't quite get their costume on right, it doesn't matter. You get the vibe. You get that they're trying to do this doctor character quickly. Then that cut quickly comes off and they come on with something else. The props are amazing in this.
So good. It's basically like a spoof. It's like Naked Gun meets Team America meets an episode of Family Guy. So it's that non-stop jokes, which I love because... if any of them don't work, you're just on to the next one.
Yeah, you're so right.
And you kind of, they're sort of not throwaway, but they're just like, just it's all about just hard jokes, just comedy, comedy, comedy.
And really knowing jokes as well. They're talking about, you know, one of the songs is about how hard it is to do something if there's bad writing, and she kind of winks to the audience.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah, I thought the sort of fourth wall breaking worked really well and helped keep, even though we're not at the Edinburgh Fringe, keep the Edinburgh Fringe feeling. Mm. Like the interaction with the audience gave you that feeling of the Edinburgh Fringe.
So yeah, just talking about interacting with the audience, there was a moment where the there's a sort of lead detective called Harrison, who is your typical burnout, like found at a bar drinking at a bar, and he's like, you know, turned his back on the force and doesn't want a partner. Anyway, so that was really good. I love that character. And he does this bit where he sort of throws a cigarette into the audience,
mm-hmm.
and the guy threw it back at him, and the whole audience was like cheering. Yeah. And I was like, it's a party. This is a, you mm-hmm. are involved in the whole thing. Like, the audience is part of this. And then there's another bit at the end where they brought somebody onto stage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that guy was a plant?
No. I think they bring someone on every time.
Because that was hilarious.
Yeah, and I think that's just the success of this. Because I think when you scale up to a musical, you're in like an off West End venue rather than the Edinburgh thing. It's a 90-minute show at Edinburgh. Like, you can't have more than... It was a one-act show at Edinburgh. This has now got an interval. In that process of making it bigger, they could have polished it up and maybe removed some of the more Edinburgh things, but I'm glad they didn't. So yeah. They kept a lot of improv in it. So there were scenes where you can see there's like a deliberate chunk of improv where the actor, like, he names sweets from a sweet shop that his dad used to run. And every night he obviously improvises the different things he's going to say. So the other actors on stage were kind of laughing at that. And that felt very like a sort of Saturday Night Live sketch where, you know, like,
what about the bit where the sheriff looks into the mirror and the girl holding the mirror back is his reflection, and they try and guess what they, you know, they were trying to mimic each other.
Which is something I've seen like Kristen Wiig and Will Ferrell do a similar thing on SNL. And I thought those were really clever because it makes the audience, you feel like, wow, this is, they're improvising. Anything could happen. This could go anywhere. So the comedic results feel really like fresh and funny.
We're watching craft, darling.
Yeah. And I think that's so much fun. The energy is breakneck pace.
You don't want it to end. It's a little bit like when you've like just seen a comedy gig, I guess, and you're just kind of like, well, why would I leave when I'm laughing the whole way through? I could watch it again tomorrow. I love it.
The choreography was really good by Matt Cole, who did Newsies, so like a proper West End choreographer they got in. And although some of them clearly were professional dancers, but not all of them were.
Yeah, I thought the hoedown, there's a bit where they have a sort of hoedown segment in it. I was like thinking, this is really good choreography.
Yeah, but even the physical comedy stuff, I was thinking just the fight scenes and stuff were done in a really comedic way, but you can tell a choreographer had worked on those moments to kind of just some really clever stuff, some of the like roly-poly things. It was all just really good. I think, although I think it's brilliant, it won't be for everyone. If you saw Operation Mincemeat and didn't like it, like if that kind of comedy,
who wouldn't like it?
I can just see some people who don't like that style of comedy, that kind of silly spoof doesn't work for everyone. I think it's hilarious, but I think some people might roll their eyes a little bit. There was a Beauty and the Beast joke, which I did not enjoy,
because
this is an 80s show. The whole opening number is about the 80s. Don't make a joke about Beauty and the Beast, okay? It's 1991. It's too far into the 90s.
Listen, the joke was really funny, so I don't mind. It really made me laugh.
No, see, it pulled me out. I thought, I either need 80s reference, or you need to make it fully anachronistic and have it like a 2000s reference that no one in the 80s would have known. Otherwise, it feels too borderline, as if they maybe thought that Beauty and the Beast was an 80s cartoon. So that's the only one for me where I was just like, that's a no. But other than that, like, again, it moves on so quickly. So yeah, there was a few jokes where I'm like, that's not the funniest. But then I'm like, there's just another one straight after that was funny.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. And I just think that the fact that it feels like you're at the Edinburgh Fringe is a real
Just talking about like, you know, jokes that aren't funny and stuff. I guess because you can see that all these people are friends, you feel like you're a friend. You're watching this big creative thing happen. When maybe something isn't like the thing that you would find funny, but they may have thought in the room, like, oh my God, this would be a really funny bit. It doesn't bother me because I just think I feel like we're part of this creative, it's so creative.
Mm-hmm. It's like goodwill, isn't there? Yeah. There's a goodwill created in the audience from watching it, which is a real clever trick to create that when you're not in Edinburgh.
And I think you were right when you're like, they've thrown so much at it. They've tried so many different things. Like, there's so much going on that I don't even remember anything that didn't land very well with me. All I remember is the good bits.
Yeah.
I love it.
It was good fun. I would just say that I wasn't fully bought in for the first 5 minutes. I was thinking, okay, because I knew you said it was amazing. I was thinking, okay, and I can't remember what moment it was, but I guess it hits a point of the more jokes they throw at it, and maybe the first bit of audience participation-y stuff, I just started feeling like, okay, this is...
You were sat in front of me, and you were well into it. They were saying, put your hands up, you put your hands up.
Yeah. I feel like, they sort of won me around quite quickly. I just, at the beginning, I was thinking, oh, is this going to... Like, one or two of the jokes that didn't land for me, I was thinking, oh, I don't know. But then I was like, oh, no, it's fine. There's going to be a million jokes, and the vast majority of them are really funny. And also, it's just a good time. It's just silly. I thought... the improv-y stuff really made it, and they need to keep that. And it's clever how they've kept that while making a polished production in the Off West End theatre, you know?
Did you love the song If I Should Possibly Die Tonight? Tonight.
Yeah,
isn't that good?
The songs are really good. I think Ben Adams, you know, although they're not maybe as lyrically up there as some like the producers or like some other comedy music with hard hitting, real hard comedy lyrics, they are. They're pop, like their 80s, that 80s pop is good, so they're never a pain to listen to. They're kind of like a fun, upbeat 80s pop vibe.
And I will say that when we left, everybody had the last song stuck in their head, and I think that's a sign of a really good closing number. If you're all singing it on the way to the tube, you've done something right.
Yeah, and the audience absolutely loved it. It was like such a hit the night we saw it, and I think it will continue to be a hit. It was a very good production.
Isn't it great to see something that just ticks all the boxes? Oh, I really want to go see it again. So if we do want to go see Police Cops, the musical, again,
It runs until the 20th of April.
Is that it?
Yes, not that long. Tickets are, should we have a look at Friday night? So it's a 7:45 start. It actually ran long this time. I wonder if that's going to be an ongoing thing. It said it was an hour and 55. It ran more like 2 and a bit. Didn't feel long, but I think because it does have this kind of loose style where they can kind of improv, maybe that's why. But anyway, it's 7:45 start, and tickets are either £32, £45, £32.50 or £27.50. Ooh, if you sat on the sides in the 27
about where we sat, we need to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. So if you look on the map in the stalls, there's a little block in the centre of the stalls at the back, which is the sound desk, lighting desk. And the back row is where we sat, F. And F13 next to that lighting box is too close to the lighting box. So I would stay away from that blank hole in the middle.
The fact that they didn't sell that seat as restricted view is, like, not okay.
Yeah, they should. But yeah, just avoid that centre of the stalls, back row, next to the kind of blank bit on the map, which is the lighting desk. You don't want to sit there. But I would say go for one of these £30 earlier in the week, or at the weekends, the 30, what did I say they were? 32, 35?
Yeah.
The cheap seats are on the sides. I don't know. I think you'd still have a good time watching it from the side. It doesn't really matter, but I do think seeing it front on for the there would be some gags that you would miss from the side, or you'd see differently perhaps.
I think you'd see things differently with props.
Yeah,
I think it's worth getting the illusions from the front.
Yeah, so I think for 30 something pounds, it's not that expensive.
Oh, it's worth it.
And it's a
you
small
can have
theater
a great night out.
Yeah, it's very much, oh yeah, I think the 7:45 start might even be to give that extra, do you know when something starts at 7:45, you do feel that extra sense of like, oh, we have some extra time. Like, yeah. Should we get a drink?
Yes.
Like, it does that 15 minutes somehow. Because often for a 7:30, you're sort of like rushing to arrive by 7-ish. Yeah. Whereas this just feels like there were more people in the bar having a drink. And I think that kind of fun atmosphere, that late night in...
Do you think it would transfer? I mean, it looks like some it's not selling out, is it?
I hope... No, I don't think it should. I like... unlike, to compare it again to...
Operation
Mincemeat. That is more of like a show with a storyline that can go into a theatre. This has to keep the fringy audience interaction vibe. Otherwise, it's lost, I think. Mm. Otherwise, all those other comic beats don't land as well. So it has to be in a space where the audience are floor level on some bits.
Yeah, it's you're lit as well. Like, you're not in the dark. For example, like the audience are very well lit, aren't they? It's like,
yeah, you feel
it's
like
bright
in there.
It's neon, it's bright.
So it would only work, in my opinion, in this sort of venue. I'm trying to think in the West End what other venues are like smaller and similar, like the Leicester Square, like comedy clubby kind of venue, like, or possibly Soho Theatre. because that's got, you've got the sense that you're in a comedy space.
Cabaret kind of seating.
Yeah, like the upstairs, or even the upstairs, which is more of a theatre. But at least you feel like you're in a comedy venue, not a West End theatre.
Proscenium Arch, yeah.
Yeah, you can't be in a velvet seat, do you know what I mean? It needs to be a flip down.
Yeah, good point.
That sort of vibe.
Yeah.
For it to, and that's the key of the success of this show, I think, is that they've transposed the Edinburgh Fringe feel to London.
Yeah, it's just a great show. I really hope people go and see this.
Yeah, so that's Police Cops. Police Cops, a musical running at the Southwark Playhouse Elephant, their elephant venue, from the 1st of March until the 20th of April. Yeah, so I think that was we've had a good few weeks of theatre.
Yeah, and we've got MJ the Musical coming up.
MJ the Musical next week, so that's very exciting. Christopher Wilden, the dance choreographer and theatre choreographer and director, is produced this show, directed it, choreographed it. Just cannot wait to see his choreography on these Michael Jackson songs.
What else do we have coming up?
That's it. I think that's the only show we've got booked is MJ the Musical, so we need to get something else booked in. Oh, Sister Act the Musical is starting again soon, and we might be able to go to the press night of that one.
Is Beverly in it again?
Yes, with Beverly Knight again. So
okay, I would definitely like to see it. I'll go see Bev in anything.
She's starting in it, and then Alexandra Burke is going to take over halfway through the run for the second half of the run. That's going to be at the Dominion, that big theatre.
Water, Dark's back.
So
wait, was that her? It was her, wasn't it, when she said that?
No, that's Dani Minogue.
Oh, yeah.
She did...
Okay.com.
Yeah, .com. .com was her line. So yeah, Beverly Knight starting in Sister Act, and that opens, I think, in next week.
Or which theatre?
The Dominion.
Oh,
Tottenham
and
Court
that's
Road.
Where The Devil Wears Prada is going to be on.
The Elton John one, yes.
Yes, and they've just announced casting for that.
Vanessa Williams is playing... Yeah. What's she called?
Anna Wintour's character.
Yeah, she's called Wilhelmina?
Yes, I think so.
Oh no, that's her character from Ugly Betty was Wilhelmina. Oh. What's she called in this? Miranda Priestley.
Yes, she's playing Miranda Priestley.
That's good casting.
Yeah, I really, I think I will go, I'll book seats for that.
That doesn't start until August? October.
Oh, October.
I think it's quite late, yeah. So Sister Act's going into the Dominion first, and I think we might be able to get some press tickets for that one to go and see it again.
Yes,
we did review it on the podcast, and we really enjoyed it.
It was really good fun.
Had good music. We liked the soundtrack. We liked the cast recording.
Good costumes, good music.
And Beverly's just amazing. Just hearing Beverly sing live, you're like, how is that live? How does she sound like a cast recording in person? It's brilliant. I love her. So hopefully we'll have a review of Sister Act along with MJ the Musical.
I saw a really good clip of Beverly Knight on Radio 2, and she's gone into like the live lounge and done a performance, and Jeff Goldblum is sat there, and like they've you can see his reaction. His jaw is on the floor.
Because
he can't believe that she sounds like that live. Yeah. It's effortless for her.
Mm.
She's the range of her voice.
So good. Imagine just being able to sing anything you wanted.
Really well.
Yeah, really well. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Can't wait to see Beverly Knight again. So thank you for listening to this episode of Theatre Club Podcast.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.